to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality, with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and today's show is titled The Phoenix Lights, and we'll be discussing UFO sightings. Understanding our spirituality includes understanding the universe we live in, the other beings that inhabit it with us, and our origin as a species. To do this, we need to have an open mind to all possibilities. On March 13, 1997, thousands of eyewitnesses across the state of Arizona, including the governor, reported seeing multiple light formations flying as low as between 1,000 and 1,500 feet off the ground. This silent formation made its presence known from Las Vegas to nearly the Mexican border to include moving right over the Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. Dr. Lynn Katai photographed this strange phenomena that night, and she wrote a fascinating book about it called The Phoenix Lights. Dr. Lynn Katai is an internationally acclaimed physician and health educator and was leading the cutting-edge era of early disease detection and prevention as the chief clinical consultant of the Imaging Prevention Wellness Center at the world-renowned Arizona Heart Institute in Phoenix, Arizona, until coming forward after 7 years of anonymity as a key witness to the historic and still unexplained mass sightings throughout the Arizona state on March 13, 1997. Dr. Lynn Katai graduated with an MD degree from Temple University School of Medicine in 1974, and she completed her postdoctorate studies at the Medical College of Pennsylvania. Dr. Lynn Katai, welcome to the show, Lynn. It's a great pleasure having you with us today.
No, it's a great pleasure for me to be here, and especially since it is a spiritual show, and as you'll learn, the Phoenix Lights are very important, not only for the hardware, the nuts and bolts of what people saw, thousands of people, over 10,000 people actually, throughout Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, and California on March 13th, 1997, and actually before. I started seeing them 2 years before, we can get into that, but also how they affected people at a very deep spiritual level. And for anybody out there who's not familiar with the mass sighting that happened in 1997, 19 years ago next weekend, while thousands of people were outside purposely looking up at the sky for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet, they also caught a glimpse of a mile to 2 mile wide, in some very credible reports, either orbs, giant balls, equidistantly placed in a mile wide V formation, or actual craft. And if you get on the Phoenix Lights Network website, which is www.thephoenixlights.net, and go to the GAP page, G-A-P. There is so much more to this story. That's one of the reasons that I came forward after 7 years of anonymity, which we'll get to, but compiling incredible data. And this was a 12-year study by the investigators of thousands of reports from the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, Arizona MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, as well as then Councilwoman Frances Barr, which was also vice mayor of Phoenix at the time, and Village Labs, which was a computer clearinghouse lab for the reports. And after all the studies for 12 years, it was concluded that there were 10 different craft. And if you go on the GAP page, GAP, Geospatial Animation Project, on the PhoenixLights.network website, you'll see that they're very, very different. It's really mind-boggling. Whether it was one craft that could morph into looking differently, or actually the perspective from where the person was standing, or a parade of different craft. And ultimately, that's what the investigators concluded, because there were many things happening at the same time in different areas. So, you know, that in itself is mind-boggling. Now, going back to March 13th, If you heard in the media that it was one or two events, whatever you've heard, that was, again, one of the reasons that I came forward to set the record straight. There is so much more to this mass sighting before and after, as well as during. And during, on March 13th, the sightings actually started about 3 p.m. in the afternoon, daylight sightings of these massive craft. And then at 5:30, they were seen by Native Americans in New Mexico, the 7 o'clock hour in California. Actually, at 11:30, the 11 o'clock hour, there were two commercial airlines that were passing over Las Vegas and actually reported one of these mile-wide craft was hovering right over, covering Vegas. And that's a whole story in itself that I get into in the book. And then about 3 a.m., and these sightings continued, the bulk of reports came out between 8 and 10. That's why you hear so much about that time frame. But these sightings continued, even though that's when most people were outside looking up. At 3 a.m., there was a call to the National Reporting Center, National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, by an alleged crewman from Luke Air Force Base. Very detailed report. We have some of the recording in the documentary, and I describe even more in the book, in very, very detailed description of one of these craft hovering, this mile-wide silent craft. And that's the other thing. I'll get back to the craft themselves. But one of them was hovering allegedly right over the center of Phoenix, 7th Avenue and Indian School. And there were civilians that saw this happen. Air Force jets were sent out to intercept it, get gun camera film of it. We've heard they did. And as they got closer, the lights started to dim. And as they got even closer, the entire craft blinked out and disappeared. And the crewman said that he was one of the people to help one of the pilots out of his own aircraft because he was so shaken up by it. And also, The pilot was so shaken up by it. And also reported that Luke Air Force Base was on lockdown after that. So they knew very well what was going on. And then the sightings continued, and we have the last report actually was at 5:30 the next morning when a Boeing crew coming into work at Sky Harbor International Airport saw one of these craft hovering right over their tarmac. So there were many things happening at the same time for many, many hours. Now, going back to the technology, which is mind-boggling, and this is 19 years later, we haven't seen anything like this. And if anybody has, please let me know. Because these craft, not only were they massive, they were gliding very slowly, about 30 miles an hour, right over rooftops. Some people say it was so close that they could have thrown a rock at it. And some people saw these orbs detach from the main object, go out into the environment, and then redock with it later. Other people saw these craft that were totally silent, take off at blink speed without even dispersing the air around it. So we're talking about amazing, amazing technology, to be sure. And what happened to me personally was that 2 years before the mass sighting was the first time that I even had an inkling that this kind of technology existed, because I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all, nor did my husband, who's also a physician. But we had a very close sighting to our home. We live mountainside in Paradise Valley, pretty high in the mountain, and have a panoramic view of the city skyline from our home. So we know what helicopters and streetlights and car lights. We see the airport, so we see planes coming in there all the time. So we're quite familiar with lights out there. And this was very different. In fact, and I have come not to believe in coincidence, and this was one little coincidence that happened to be the night before my birthday. It was February 6th in the evening, and my husband was by one wall of our bedroom as a window. So whatever pops up out there, we see if we're in that room. And he was talking to my mother-in-law, who was calling from Philadelphia to wish me a happy birthday, and I was in the other room in the bath, actually. And he noticed that there was something underneath, like a little lower than our where our house is. And he's not one to get ruffled. He was on several state and medical boards at the time, and calls me out of the bath. He says, "Get over here quick. What the heck is this?" And I grab a towel, run to the window, and a little below us, about 50, 75 feet off a very treacherous decline, desert landscaping with cacti and all that, were three amber orbs balls of light in a pyramid formation. And as soon as I saw it, it was like, oh my goodness, what is...
Now, how far were these lights from you at the time?
Less than 100 yards from our home.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, so they were really close.
So could you see a form around these lights?
That's a really good question, Dave, because, you know, coming from a video background, you didn't mention this, but my life's work actually for the last 40 years has been community education. Besides being a physician, I started doing health tips for kids in for the community in 1976 for Philadelphia NBC affiliate with Jessica Savage, if you remember that name.
I do remember. And, we live in Philly,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, and she was actually my mentor, and they were so successful that I was asked to do a syndication. When we moved to Phoenix in 1980, they were already showing the syndication at CBS here, and then I did some health tips for a while for the NBC affiliate here, then USA Cable in the early 80s, and by the mid-80s was seeing kids in the practice, because adolescent medicine is my specialty, that were drowning in substance abuse and wanted to do something productive to wake them up to the reality of substance abuse for the classroom, and started producing video and workbook curriculums on vital health issues. I have one on AIDS and teen pregnancy as well. Discovery Education is distributing these award-winning programs as we speak. So when this fell in my lap, I have to tell you that, number one, in good conscience, I couldn't just stick it in a drawer. I did stay anonymous for 7 years. But to get to your question, when I saw these right outside our window, I wanted to run downstairs and get my video camera, but I didn't want to miss anything. And for anyone that's had a paranormal experience, they know just what I'm saying, and thousands of people on March 13th, 1997 as well. You're in awe, you're in wonder, you don't want to move, you don't know how long it's going to last. And I tried to take everything in mentally.
Did you have any fear when you were looking?
I'll get to that, because I tried to take everything in mentally. The size, the shape, the color. They were about 3 to 6 feet each, depending on how close they were. They were actually oval shaped, like an egg on its side, and there were three distinct objects, one on top and two closely aligned underneath, and the light did not extend outside the edge. That's why I call them an orb. The light was self-contained, an amber, uniform amber light throughout, very mesmerizing, very soothing, and very comforting, I have to say. There was no fear at all. If anything, there was excitement and wonder at what I was seeing, and I thought to myself, if I don't get a camera, no one's going to believe this. And I go running to the closet to grab my 35 millimeter that I have handy to capture our beautiful sunsets here. And as I'm doing so, my husband calls me back. He says, get over here quick. One of them is disappearing. And as we both watched, the top orb without budging, and I have to say, up to that point, we have two grown men now that were kids at the time. The only movies we ever saw were E.T. and Close Encounters. We had no interest in the topic at all, but of course, they were very popular at the time, and also the original Star Trek series. And what popped in my head was a Romulan cloaking device. This thing was cloaking, but as it was, like, there was an intelligence behind it. The top orb started to implode, like shrink, like a dimmer switch. It's very hard to describe, but it got smaller, very slowly, smaller and smaller and smaller, again, as if there was an intelligence behind it, until it was a pea size, and then it disappeared, but it felt like it was still there. I have to admit that. Where did it go? So I stepped out on the balcony, got a picture of the two lower orbs. And if you go on the photo page on the Phoenix Lights Network website, you'll see not only the topography, which we'll talk about in a second, but you'll see the first picture I took of the two lower orbs. And as I'm standing there watching these two lower orbs, I have to admit, and I didn't admit this to anyone till after the mass sighting 2 years later, that it felt like there was something watching me. And going through my mind, I was thinking, who are you? What are you? Do you know that I'm here? I'd love to meet you. That's exactly what I was thinking. And the next thing I remember, the left bottom orb started to implode, just like the top one did. And something told me to take a picture, and I snapped a quick picture of that. And it was the only one that turned out at the time. But for me, and that's also posted on the photo page, for me, it was confirmation. Not only did we see something unusual, but I captured it in action. I caught one, the left bottom orb half disappeared, and one still there. But I didn't even know who to show it to. I knew no one that knew about this topic or had any interest in it. So I just wondered for 2 years what this advanced technology was.
Did you talk to your friends and such about it and the neighbors to see if they saw it?
No, I didn't. Well, first of all, we're isolated. I mean, we're pretty high in the mountains. And I did ask my neighbors. Nobody saw anything. But I wondered for 2 years why we both saw it together, how I got a picture of it. I didn't even know who to show it to. And then 2 months before the sighting, and I have to say that, you know, periodically, I mean, when we're in our bedroom, we do, you know, one wall is a window. So, I would look out to see if I saw anything that was remotely similar, and nothing for 2 years until 2 months before the mass sighting. And this is really important data. And anybody that doesn't, you know, learn my data has no idea about this. And this is really very poignant, because 2 months before the mass sighting, I noticed 3 amber orbs, and they were gigantic, but at a distance, far west, and in a line. And I'm staring at them, and I'm thinking, whoa, you know, they're amber. They're in an equidistant line formation. They're hovering for minutes, strangely similar to 95. And I watched.
Straight line.
But each one from the right to the left started to implode just like they had in 95 as I watched, and they were out. And I mentioned it to my husband briefly, and he blew it off, which was very interesting because, as an aside, he was inside, I was outside when all this was happening in 95. And afterwards, he didn't want to talk about it. He got a little anxious. I mean, everybody, you know, comes from a different background, from a different upbringing, from a different belief system. Some people can't deal with this topic. Some people don't want to, and that's okay. That's okay. Everyone in their own time. But the data is there now if they do want to learn about it. Anyway, the next evening, he was at a medical board meeting, and I happened to notice the same 3 lights in orbs, giant balls, in a formation was now far south. And I could see that it was in front of the mountains. Now, if you go to the photo page, and this is very interesting, and I'm just going to go off topic here for a teeny bit because I think you'll find it interesting coming from your background. If you look at the first picture on the photo page on the Phoenix Lights Network website, you can see there's 2 mountain ranges that we look at from our vantage point. One is on the left, that's South Mountain, and it's right, it's just south of the airport, in Sky Harbor International Airport. And the other is some miles back on the right, which is the Estrella Mountain range, and they intersect at one little section there in the middle, and in between those 2 mountain ranges is the Gila Bend Indian Reservation. Now, serendipitously, 6 months before the mass sighting, I was invited to present my substance abuse prevention education program there. They have one school, and they don't talk to outsiders, but I got friendly with the principal and some of the board members and helped them out. And after the mass sighting, I noticed, and you can see it, I mean, I always say the data speaks for itself, and this is 35 millimeter, they're in the negative, that these phenomena keep popping up right where South Mountain and the Estrella Mountain Range intersect. So I called them up and I said, did anybody happen to see strange lights back in March? And they started to giggle. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call them sky people, light beings. It's part of their culture. I had no idea. This was the first time I had heard of this. And once I started looking into this aspect of the Phoenix Lights and these anomalous aerial phenomena, I learned that indigenous cultures worldwide not only believe that there are other intelligences out there, and that these orbs, some of them believe that these orbs are ancestors coming to bring them comfort and motivation and inspiration and knowledge. But also the Gila mentioned to me that the Estrella's got its name for that very reason, because they had sightings centuries ago. There's petroglyphs on South Mountain and the Estrella's that are identical to what my husband and I saw, 3 orbs in a pyramid formation. Also the boomerang that appeared on March 13th, 1997, it's etched out thousands of years ago, and the Estrella's got its name supposedly from the Spaniards of the day that either saw these things or heard the lore. And also they mentioned that there is a gateway. They believe that there is a gateway or portal in that area. And again, if you look at my data, and you know, I'm a healthy skeptic, so I leave it open-ended for others to decide. But if you look at my data, these phenomena keep popping up in that area. Could there be a portal or gateway in that area? So that's a little aside that I thought you might find interesting, because there are indigenous peoples worldwide as well, the Hopi right here in Arizona, that have protocols to invite these phenomena in. So I found that really, really interesting that they welcome these phenomena and believe that they're real. At any rate, going back to 2 months before the mass sighting, I see these three lights in a row now in front of South Mountain. And I knew that they were in front of South Mountain because there were red blinking lights on the mountain to warn planes coming into Sky Harbor that there's a mountain there. And I thought to myself, okay, enough. I'm getting my video camera. And I ran outside, got about 18 seconds worth, and it was charged when I got it. And suddenly my camera just blinked out. It drained the battery, something, whatever. And I go inside and I hook up the battery. I go outside, they're gone. This is about 8 o'clock.
How far were these from you?
These were near the mountain. These were actually in front of the mountain. So this is about 25 miles, 30 miles from me.
Okay.
And anyway, my husband comes up the drive about 8:30, and I go outside and I say, honey, remember I mentioned the three lights far west last night in a row? Well, about a half an hour ago, they were right in front of South Mountain. As I'm pointing in that direction, they reappear in the same spot. I kid you not. And I thought, oh my goodness, I've got, and again, I don't believe in coincidence anymore, because on video, these lights look much smaller, they're white, they flicker, and 35 millimeter, they're in the negative, and they're much better for analysis. So I ran upstairs, I grabbed my 35 millimeter. As I get out on the balcony to shoot the three, suddenly six lights across, massive span, equidistant from each other, pop up above the three. It was so unnerving. And if you look at the pictures on the photo page, you can see it's way, the first one is wavy because I'm shaking. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not having an explanation for 95, going through my mind, is this a mothership? Is this a fleet? I mean, it was that unusual. And I start clicking away. And thankfully, I caught six pictures in a row of this phenomenon head on, turning into a V shape. And again, it was so unnerving. And I got up the next morning and I thought, you know what, there has to be a logical explanation for this. I'll just search it out. Somebody else had to see this. This was massive and huge. And I called around, finally found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport that saw the same thing at the same time. And they were very forthcoming initially. And they were very excited that I saw it at a distance. And what they said was that when this popped up, and this is Class B restricted airspace that it popped up at 1,000 feet altitude, which was very concerning, because anybody that goes in that 30-mile radius around the center of the airport must call the tower. And right. No one did. So they looked on radar. Didn't show up on radar. They took their binoculars to look. And in their own words, they described six points of light, totally equidistant from each other, massive span over a mile wide, that seemed to be attached to something. But they couldn't quite see what they were attached to. And you would hear this again, over and over again, during the mass sighting. And then one of them was a meteorologist, said that the whole thing turned against the wind as a unit, and then elevated slowly and moved in synchrony behind South Mountain. So I said, so what was it? And there was silence. And then one of them said, beats me. I said, you're air traffic controllers. You're supposed to know what's in our airspace. They had no clue. In fact, they ruled out every earthly possibility, from conventional aircraft to skydivers with lights to Chinese lanterns to balloons to flares, everything that they could think of. They had ruled out, and we kept in contact. I continued photographing these phenomena up into and including March 13th. And again, that night was another night for me. But unbeknownst to me, thousands of people were seeing what I had been seeing. But interestingly, you asked me if I showed this to anybody. It was getting a little ridiculous. I mean, every time I saw these lights, I felt compelled to go out and photograph them. So I thought, you know what, somebody's got to know somebody to take a look at this. So I started showing the video. Again, it doesn't do it justice, but I started showing the video to my friends. And this is how close I was. A friend of a friend had a neighbor who had a friend who knew the past president of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. So I gave him a call. I said, look, I have a picture from 95 from a very close anomalous sighting that I know is authentic, but I'd like somebody of credence to take a peek at it. And also, I'm seeing these lights nightly, and he hadn't heard about it, but there were, and I have to stress this, there were other people that were seeing them and documenting them on film, as well as myself.
Now, when was this? When did you first contact MUFON?
This was a couple weeks before the mass sighting. But interestingly, he refers me to a field investigator for the following Wednesday, who calls me on Tuesday to say that the then state director's mom had passed. He wanted to be at the meeting. Could I postpone it? And I said, geez, you know, I really want to find out what's going on. I was busy for another 2-3 weeks after. The only window of opportunity I had was Friday morning at 10 o'clock. He said, fine. I knock on his door. And as soon as he opens it, he said, did you see the mass sighting last night? And I said, well, I saw something similar to what I told you I saw 2 months ago. In fact, I got video of it. He says, terrific, because NBC is coming to interview him in a half an hour. I said, whoa. I said, I'm out of here. I said, I don't know what we're dealing with here, whether it's a hoax or military or whatever. But you know what, Dave? It's never been about me. It's about the data. And I said, you know what? Take a copy of my video, share it with whoever. I'm out of here. And I called the air traffic controllers again, by the way, to see if they had seen it. They saw it the same time I was photographing it. Mine's one of the handful of signature videos. Mine actually is the one with the three endpoints of a giant V or triangle, and it was hovering over Class B restricted airspace, the same exact location again on March 13th. And anyway, I leave at 4:30 that day. I have to tell you, the next day after the mass sighting, I'm sitting at my TV with the VCR ready to go if they were going to talk about the Phoenix Lights. My video was plastered on every television station. It was like giant, giant news. And by 9 o'clock, a couple other videos were released, came forward. One is an arrowhead of 5 lights, and all you have to do is look at it. And those lights are attached to something or have a field, a force field in between, holding them in rock-solid formation. And then that video and my video were shot before 10 o'clock. After 10 o'clock, there were two boomerang videos. One I haven't used because it looked a little haphazard, like flares do. But one of them has been rock solid. And if you just look at that video, it's very, very impressive. And we'll get back to that because a new study just came out about that video. But as it would happen, once I found out that thousands of people saw what I had been seeing, it was like, whoa, what is going on here? Because, again, I knew nothing about this topic. And I really wanted to find a logical explanation, which, by the way, I have yet to find 19 years later. But one of the most poignant things, and we'll get to that a little later, too, and please remind me, is that with thousands of people seeing, and you asked the question, seeing these gigantic, gigantic ships of craft, there has not been one report of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the mass sighting. If anything, it's quite the contrary, and I'll get to that a little bit later. But what's really interesting about how the story unfolded is that after the mass sighting, and here we're talking over 10,000 people saw this, not only in Arizona, but in Nevada and California and New Mexico, there was no investigation. There was no explanation. In fact, anybody that was asked, I called the military. I've met a number of conversations in my book. They were just as curious as we were what happened. And then, interestingly, in May, at a councilwoman, because so many of her constituents had asked her to please look into it, a councilwoman then, Frances Barr, which she was also the vice mayor at the time of Phoenix, asked very innocently, could we look into it? Because so many of her constituents were asking her to. She was just doing her job, and she didn't see it. She was just asking for an investigation. She was plastered by the media. I have to tell you, at the time, in 97, it was really very difficult to come forward. The ridicule and the snickering were abundant, and I was very happy to stay anonymous and remain so for 7 years doing my own research.
Where do you think the it came from? I mean, you can get snickering from friends and such like that, but created from the snickering?
That really started in the 40s and 50s. When, you know, if you really look at the history of this, I mean, these phenomena have been around for centuries, all the way back. And I was blown away when I found out that there are primitive etchings in caves with long extinct animals, and up in the sky is what we would call UFO today. I mean, that's how they expressed themselves then. There's writings in Sumerian Sumerian writings and Egyptian writings, and even the Bible, Ezekiel's wheel, and so forth. And in the 15th century, we have frescoes and paintings of people on the ground looking up at the sky at a typical UFO, even with beings in the UFO. And then you fast forward, actually 100 years before our mass sighting in 1897, at the same time, March and April, in Kansas, California, Washington, and Canada, they were describing these massive airships with removable lights. Sound familiar? And this was 6 years before the Wright brothers took flight, okay? And then you fast forward again, and then I'm skipping a lot of stuff, but you fast forward to one of the other significant data is in World War II. They called them Foo Fighters. The same exact orb phenomena were around the aircraft, and each side thought the other side had this advanced spy technology. And it wasn't until after the war that Germany, Japan, the United States tried to find out who had this, and nobody could. Okay. And then you fast forward to the 1980s and well, actually 1950, there were sightings, the Lubbock lights is very interesting. And there's pictures of those, as well. And then in the 80s and 90s in UK and Belgium, Belgium is really a model for what should happen. They're very open to studying these phenomena, and the military, universities, scientists, civilians, so all got together to try to decipher what was going on. You ask me, where are they from? You know what? People ask me all the time, what were they? I don't know what they were, but I know that they are. And it's time we get this topic out in the open and address it, accept it, and study it so we can find out who's driving these things as well as move forward in our own evolution. And it's very interesting. 1 month before our mass sighting, on February 19th, 1997, there was another mass sighting, but in St. Petersburg, Russia. And several people got video of their craft. And again, if you look at the Gap page, they're identical to different craft that people were seeing here on March 13th in Arizona in 1997. So anyway,
I would think just the fact that the government isn't interested in
investigating. there was project
that they know about it.
Well, I was starting to say in the 50s, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is an important point. And anybody that gets the DVD, astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who just passed recently, rest his soul, is unbelievable in the documentary. And in the bonus features, he talks about this cover-up from the 50s, 40s and 50s, when the government didn't know how to deal with this. The technology was so far advanced from what we had. And we could talk for another hour on that situation. They formed Project Blue Book, which was the only official public study, but there were other studies going on behind the scenes. The Cometa Report, as well as others in other countries as well. But the main thing at that time, they were setting it up so that, you know, if they couldn't explain it, and Project Blue Book actually was headed by J. Allen Hynek, who coined the phrase close encounters. And he was plucked he was the head astronomer at Northwestern University, and he headed Project Blue Book. And he came out before he passed to say that he was told that anything that was explainable was to be put forth, and anything that was unexplainable was to not be put forth, because they didn't want to panic the public or whatever their excuse was. And also, you know, that's where the swamp gas, you know, thing came up. Also, that to deal with it, if anybody came forward, they were discredited. And that way people wouldn't come forward. And so it was a whole generation, really, of this kind of thinking that and also people feel uncomfortable. As I mentioned before, some people can't deal with this. And the way to deal with it is to laugh at it and make it a joke. Well, it's not a joke. Okay. And for thousands of people that saw the Phoenix Lights, it's a very, very real and very, very powerful and profound experience. But what was interesting as the story unfolded is that not until a June 18th front page USA Today article came out. There was nothing other than the Frances Barwood asking, and she was plastered. She had jokes made of her in the newspaper and so forth. There was, however, one Fox reporter who saw it himself, and he was right on top of it. He wanted to find out what was going on, and he did some amazing, amazing reports. But until June 18th, it really wasn't out there beyond Arizona. And the front page of USA Today really opened up our sighting to international scrutiny. We were deluged by media from all over the world. And once they started talking to the witnesses, their stories, their reports were so detailed and so heartfelt that we're saying, why isn't there an investigation? Something really extraordinary happened here. Why isn't there an explanation? And then 1 month later, and again, I had called every military. Well, let me get first. The day after, the day after that June 18th, 1997, front page USA Today article, suddenly, after nothing for months, we get an announcement from publicly that the former governor, Fife Symington, Arizona governor, was calling a press conference that afternoon to reveal the culprit, quote unquote, of the lights over Phoenix. Now, mind you, it was much more far-reaching than Phoenix, but this is what they announced. And people took it seriously. In fact, when I just did a presentation last year for Contact in the Desert, in the audience of my workshop, there was a gal that was there at the time, and I didn't even know this happened, because all you see when they do show it from the media is he comes marching out, one of his aides, in a giant alien head costume and made a mockery of it. And initially,
I saw the pictures of it.
You saw that. Yeah. So initially the audience laughed, it was like a nervous laugh. And then they turned off the cameras. And she said that after the cameras were turned off, the audience went ballistic on the governor. How can you do this? This is so inappropriate. People really saw it. It's interesting to find out what happened after the cameras were turned off.
Well, he came out later on after he retired. Oh,
Wait a minute. Yes. Let's not ruin the surprise. Okay. But he did come out 10 years later with another announcement. But anyway, about a month after this happened with the USA Today article, and thank you for reminding me of that, I had called the military bases again. And again, they were all stumped. Some of the conversations I have are very comical. I get a call on July 24th. Now, this is months later, from one of the heads of PR at the Air National Guard. And she says, oh, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March. And I was thrilled. I was looking for any logical explanation. She says, do you believe that nobody ever looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard? And the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares in Operation Snowbird, which I later found out in military terms means diversionary tactical maneuvers. And it's been a diversion ever since they came forward with this. But at any rate, she says, that must be what some people saw. And I said, well, was the Maryland Air National Guard in town in January? She says, oh, no. I said, are you sure? She said, absolutely not. I said, well, I have 35-millimeter photographs that prove that the same exact phenomena was in the same exact location 2 months before the mass sighting in January, confirmed the next morning by air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport as hovering over Class B restricted airspace at 1,000 feet altitude. And she says, you never told me that. And then she says, I said, besides, you're trying to tell me that flares, and I had learned what flares look like by then, that drift and drop with the wind haphazardly within minutes, have huge smoke trails that are illuminated by the flare itself and are meant to illuminate the area around it, which not one witness to the true unknowns described, traverse the entire state in a rock-solid, equidistantly spaced, mile-wide V formation for hours? And she says, I have a call coming in. I'll get back to you. Well,
now, what was her role?
Waiting. Pardon me?
What was her role? Why,
She was one of the heads of PR at the Air National Guard. Oh. And like I said, I had called around. I had talked to her previously. Yeah. And so it was very interesting. So after, I have to tell you, that was very frustrating, Dave, because, knowing that these definitely were not flares, for them to make that announcement that they were, that the whole sighting was flares, was a bit frustrating. And the next day, front page, they went with this big time. In fact, I should mention, right after I got off the phone with her, and this was July 24th, it was my sister-in-law's birthday in Delaware. And as soon as she got on the phone, when I called to wish her a happy birthday, she said, oh, Lynn, I just saw a report on the news that the lights you saw in Phoenix in March were flares. Now they got an announcement before we did. We didn't have the announcement
now,
until last.
Now, why do you think the newspapers would go with a story like that?
Well, you know, that's very interesting, Dave. That's a really good question, because after I called my sister-in-law, I thought, you know what? I had asked who was going to be releasing the story, and the PR from Air National Guard gave me his name at the Arizona Republic. I immediately called him up and I said, look, I'm staying anonymous, but I do have 35 millimeter photographs to prove that what happened here, number one, was definitely not flares. And number two, happened before the mass sighting. There's a lot more to the story. He says, I'm sorry, I'm on a deadline. I can't talk to you, and he hung up.
It's awfully strange that so many people are involved in what is almost certainly a smear campaign, a cover-up. I mean, it makes no sense. And if you look back and you see Edgar Mitchell was one, but Buzz Aldrich, on and on. Neil Armstrong, so many people have come out, people that are the top of our community, and said, hey, these things are real. We've got pictures of them. And it's just staggering to me that so many people, like in the press, support this.
Well, you know,
you wonder who's behind all this, don't you?
You do, don't you? Especially for the fact that there are many pilots. In fact, Dr. Richard Haynes, who studied my data and was very impressed, and he also did reports on the Foo Fighters and felt that they were very similar to the Foo Fighters in World War II, also has studied thousands of pilot reports, and they were threatened with their careers. And we have in our bonus features on the DVD a 93-year young French pilot who is now deceased. He just passed this past year, who describes these Foo Fighters. He saw them on World War II and went to report them, and he tells what happened to him, and it wasn't very pretty. Anyone that tried to report them, particularly in the military or pilots, were really shunned, really ridiculed, threatened with their careers, and now more and more are coming forward. And that was one of the reasons I came forward, Dave. I mean, after 7 years of anonymity, because after thousands of people saw what I saw, I pushed my whole medical career aside to try to find a logical explanation and started keeping an intricate journal of everything, of my conversations with military, conversations with witnesses, the television reports, the news reports, and the history of these phenomena, ending up with a 750-page journal 4 years later that I didn't know what to do with.
What's your purpose? What are you trying to?
You don't just give up a
world class medical career, you know, because you saw some lights. You clearly have a purpose.
Well, you know, after the 4 years and having a 750-page journal, and I really focused on all the only credible data that I could find, I was blown away that there was so much credible data out there. And thought, my goodness, what am I going to do with this? I did not want to come forward because of all the ridicule, because of the discrediting. I mean, you know, being an accomplished medical doctor, why would I do that to myself?
Right.
And I had to go back to work to help put our younger son through medical school. He's a neurologist now, and he actually had a couple of sightings with us. He's in the documentary. And while I was at the Arizona Heart Institute as the chief clinical consultant of the Wellness and Imaging Center, I started editing down the book to the best, the most credible data that I found, and ended up with 250 pages that was pretty mind-boggling. And I have to say, as a scientist, as an educator, for sure, as a physician, to let people know they're not crazy, even though most anomalies can be explained, only a small percent, very small, 5-10% cannot. Just because we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. We may just be looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency. And
right.
People have to know out there, when you have an experience, when somebody has a paranormal experience, it's real to them. And if you don't share it, it festers. It's not healthy. So one of the other reasons I came forward, Dave, was to let people know that it's really important to share. It's cathartic. It's even if they just share with me. Okay, because if you go on the website, there's a contact at the top, and I have tens of thousands of people contacting me, and I take confidentiality very seriously, and I try to answer every single one if I possibly can. But the point is that it's important to share. Now, as I said, as a scientist, as a physician, as an educator, and an experiencer, I couldn't stick what I had in a drawer. I thought about it, okay? I thought about just sticking everything in a drawer, letting my grandkids see it years from now and see what they think about it. But in good conscience, after doing much soul searching, and I talk about this in the book, I show...
Well, we're running out of time, so I got to ask you a couple questions. Do you know of Colonel Philip Corso?
Sure.
Yeah. He died maybe 10 years ago. I don't remember where. He wrote the book the day after Roswell. He will argue, or did argue, and did say on the record that we have that technology now. We have a lot of it. Not all of it, but we have a lot of it.
And it's gotten through to the mainstream, you know, serendipitously. But one of the other things before we end, which is really important and for your program, is that not only wasn't there one report of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the mass sighting, in real time and long term, it changed people to a positive spiritual place. It's unbelievable how people were in awe and wonder, felt blessed that they had this experience. To this day, I'm still receiving emails and messages on Facebook. If anybody's on Facebook, please look us up at the Phoenix Lights Network page, and then found out that a number of witnesses had near-death experiences as children that was reawakened by the mass sighting, which really caught me off guard because I did too. And I get into that in the book, and also thought, wow, could there be a connection between all unexplained phenomena, whether it's near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience? And lo and behold, I started finding credible university data there as well and lay it out very simply in the book. Not only the experience is very similar, but the after effect, the awakening, the enlightenment, the connectedness to the universe, to the earth, to each other, that is felt for the first time in many people. It's mind-boggling, the powerful energy and transformation. I started calling all unexplained phenomena UP and up, because the transformation is mind-boggling and important. And that's part of the whole Phoenix Lights aura, too. So whoever was doing this, whoever did this, not only wanted to wake us up to their presence in a very non-threatening, gentle way, but also wake us up to who we are as human beings, to the spiritual beings we are, and that we've gotten so far away from that, and to wake up. And people come back from these experiences not only with an urgency like myself to share it with others, but also to let people know that we are guardians. And Dr. Edgar Mitchell said this all the time, and he started the Noetic Science Institute, which is science and spirituality, that we are guardians of our planet, and to wake up to what we're doing. And that's the message worldwide from all these unexplained phenomena, from all these up experiences, to wake up to what we're doing to ourselves and our planet before it's too late.
Yeah. And every contact that we are aware of, as at least in my knowledge, it's all been benevolent. It's all been for what anybody can feel is for our own best interest.
Exactly. And even, the studies that have been done at Harvard and so forth, that anyone that goes into therapies with that so-called abducted, and I don't get into that at all, really comes full circle with therapy and with really reflecting and feels that, ultimately that it was a spiritual experience. So I agree with you there. It's very interesting when you see the data. The data speaks for itself, and I urge people to take a peek at it. The website, the phoenixlights.net website, the book, The Phoenix Lights, The Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, and the documentary, which is really a gentle overview. I wanted to get something out there for the general public so that they could learn about what happened with the Phoenix Lights, but also about the topic. So I recommend people take a peek.
I've read this book. I read it a number of years ago, and it's a fascinating book. I want to encourage all my listeners to get a hold of the book. It's easy to get a hold of. It's Dr. Lynn Kitai, K-I-T-E-I. You can get it on Amazon, and it's fascinating. And in all honesty, it should be just the beginning of what you're looking at. Lynn, it was fabulous having you on today. We clearly didn't have enough time to do this subject justice.
Well, we'll do it again.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for coming. And I wish you the best on your efforts on this.
And we have a big event coming up on March 13th at the Scottsdale Harkin Shea Theater. It's sold out every year. We show our internationally award-winning documentary and have speakers and Q&A and book signing. It's really, really fun. So anybody that's in this area or knows anybody that is, please look us up on the website and as well as Phoenix Lights Network Facebook page. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Keep looking up.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly on the website, and I'll post those answers as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. One last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.